Hello and welcome to Quote Unquote Guilty, the only guilty pleasure podcast with air quotes in the title. I'm your host, Joe Ketchum, and I'm joined today by two returning guests. I got Andrew Kropel.
Hi, doggy.
Oh, hi, doggy. Oh, hi, Andrew.
Hi, Mark.
One of our resident Tommy Wiseau experts.
So, the French Revolution.
We'll get to the Wiseaupia, because the room is not in the Wiseaupia canon. And you. Raymond Gardner.
Hello.
How's it going, Ray?
Not too bad. Fresh out some dental work, so...
Yeah, Ray just got some teeth fixed.
It's not the drugs. Yeah. Teeth with an F.
Teeth fixed?
Yeah. And I'm also a Tommy Wiseau virgin here, so...
Yeah.
We'll have both perspectives.
So, today we're talking about The Room, which is, like, the gold standard for terrible movie, or so bad it's good movie, or guilty pleasure movie. This is the one. This is, like, at the top of the list. It's a classic. And
mildly traumatic.
Yeah. Especially, and the real fun of it was Ray had never seen it before. So, A, we went to see it live in the theater because that's the only way to
Which
see
really
The Room.
Redeemed it, yeah,
it's the
yeah.
only way to see The Room is with an audience of people. It's the only way I ever want to see it because they had a national release through Fathom Events in January. Mm-hmm. So we all went to that because I was going to go anyway, and I was just looking for people to go with.
Apparently, there might be another screening on Friday.
Yeah, but not locally. I don't think so. Because Celebration, they didn't seem to sell many tickets, so I don't think they're bringing it back. Or at least it wasn't on the like app.
It could have been the day though. I mean, it was a Wednesday night.
Yeah, I would think a Friday night would be better because when I saw it, the last time I saw it live was at the Alamo. When the Alamo was still here.
Remember
the Alamo. Yes. And it was sold out, and the crowd was thrilled, and Greg Sestero was there, and he had people come up and do readings from the script, and he had
the Alamo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
He had like a clip of a documentary that was being put together about it that I still have yet to see. I don't know if anything's being done with that. Just kind of a behind the scenes look at The Room. And yeah, I got to meet him afterwards, and he signed my copy of The Disaster Artist. Because I am obsessed with The Room. I am. I just... My brother introduced it to me. He came across it, you know, because it was floating around various college campuses. It became this instant cult hit in 2003 when it first came out.
How did he approach you with it?
Keith?
Yeah. Like, how do you...
How do you set
somebody up for The Room?
He had it, like... he had it, like, burned onto a DVD-R. And he was like, this is the worst fucking movie, but it's somehow amazing. Yeah. And I was like, I'll check it out. So I'm pretty sure the first time I watched it was either by myself or I think I went over. I have a couple of friends who are twins and we used to get together and watch bad movies together. And now one of them moved far away and one of them I rarely see. But I'm pretty sure the first time I watched it was with those guys. And we just were in awe of this thing. It's unbelievable that this exists. And then you read The Disaster Artist, the book, and it's fascinating.
That's got to be next on my list.
Yeah, you should check it out.
The movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would suggest, I don't know, I kind of go back and forth. I didn't enjoy the movie as much as everyone else did because I've read the book, and the book is infinitely better. So you might be better off seeing the movie and then reading the book so that you can enjoy
Sometimes
the movie and then go into detail with the book, get the extra detail.
Mm-hmm.
But reading the book first, I was a little bit disappointed with the film. I liked it. It's one of my top 10 of the year.
Is this still showing here in Kalamazoo?
It has not yet shown in Kalamazoo.
At all?
Yeah.
Oh.
But you know, we were talking to a guy at Celebration who said it's coming. They do plan on bringing it hopefully soon. Because I wouldn't mind seeing it again. To watch James Franco play Tommy Wiseau is a delight.
Spot on.
I mean, it's spot on, yeah. He completely disappears into that character. But, you know.
I can see it.
I saw it up in Grand Rapids.
Okay.
Yeah, we were up there seeing Amanda's family, and I was like, The Disaster Artist is showing. We have movie pass. Maybe after dinner we could go see a movie. And she let me drag her to The Disaster Artist.
How did she like it?
She liked it. She hasn't read the book, but she was with me at the Alamo screening of The Room, so she has seen The Room.
Okay.
And it's one of those things, it was like, why did you make me watch this? But I think she enjoyed it. Like, the event was a lot of fun. Because, goddammit, seeing it live.
So, your first time seeing it was from a burnt DVR, or yeah. DVD-R
yeah.
copy. Your first time seeing it was...
Live in a theater. You yeah. lucky son of a bitch.
I saw it for the first time the way that God intended, which is on Cartoon Network.
Are you serious?
Yeah, what? That's where, like, it became popular, was on Cartoon Network.
Was it like an Adult Swim? In the middle of the night, they yep. played The Room?
Yep.
That's awesome.
What did they do with all the sex scenes?
There was a big, massive blue, black
They censored it?
I can't remember if it was blue or black, but, it, like, they showed it all just... With, like, essentially they covered up most of the screen with it.
Yeah, because during the sex scenes, it is just, like, an entire screen of ass. An entire screen of tits.
Yeah.
It's just, like, there's nudity galore mm-hmm. in the sex scenes.
And I didn't expect it. And there were multiple sex scenes.
Technically.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. That does make sense, though, that Adult Swim would have just uh-huh. catapulted that movie. That seems yeah. like
yep.
the sort of ironic... shit they used to play with late at night.
Mm-hmm. So that's how I saw it.
That, I think, makes a lot of sense for their audience that they uh-huh. would get on board with The Room.
And my first exposure to Tommy was so... well, I mean, technically The Room is, but I've been hearing you guys talk about Neighbors for years now. I
yep.
mean, literally yeah. 4 years. And I heard it was so bad. And I don't take a whole lot of pleasure in watching bad shit unless it's with people. Because I'll consider their time wasted otherwise. So, you know, like, as a rule nowadays, I don't really go see horror or comedy in theaters. It's almost only Marvel nowadays because I know I'll enjoy it, which is kind of crazy. So the idea of intentionally watching a whole series that's awful, but I guess seeing The Room now,
yeah,
I probably did it in the right
order. It's like The Room where it's taken so seriously and it's meant to be a serious endeavor and it just fails in every conceivable way. And it's, you feel like he'd accidentally do something right and he mm-hmm. just doesn't. It just completely fails.
Oh, wait. The Neighbors? Yeah. Complete.
The Room as well. Oh, I think The Room, everything The Room tries to do falls short. But that's the wonder of it. I like some of
the music. the softcore music.
What is it? You Are My Rose?
Yeah.
You are
yeah.
my rose. You are my rose. You are my rose. You are. Yeah. That's the Sestero Lisa first sex scene. I forgot they had a second sex scene where she actually gets naked. Because in the first sex scene, they're like having sex on the stairs and they're like fully clothed. She might be in a bra or something, but, and he might, I think they have their shirts off,
mm-hmm.
but they have pants on. They're trying to have sex through their pants.
and there were so many times. I mean, I would just lean over to because I sat between you guys, so I would lean over and just ask questions.
Yeah.
Because I was just incredulous at this whole thing.
Oh, God.
Because first of all, I cannot accept, my mind still won't let me accept that this guy is not in on the joke. But apparently he
isn't.
He's not.
Isn't.
I mean, after The Room initially released and people went to see it over and over and over again because it's just such a train wreck and it's hilarious in how bad it is, then he rebranded it as a dark comedy, not understanding what a dark comedy is. It's not just like a dramatic movie that people laugh at.
Right. That's totally not it.
You start off, the credits, of course, are running at the beginning, and it says line producer was Greg Sestero,
and yeah. I lean over to Joe.
It was like, the actor? The actor's the line producer? And I said, not really, because none of them knew what a line producer was.
did they mean he provided the cocaine?
No drugs.
Oh.
Yeah, that's one of the more surprising things about the Tommy Wiseau story, is that Greg Sestero lived with him for a long time, and... did nothing unhealthy to his body. Did no drugs whatsoever. No alcohol.
Well, with a body and an ass like that.
I mean, you gotta.
I was gonna say,
his body's a temple that you have to maintain. It's like a Swiss watch that a little grain of salt gets in there and throws the entire thing off.
He's in amazing shape. I'll give him that.
It's amazing.
Luxurious head of hair, too.
Yeah, yeah.
For being about 108, somewhere in there, he is in good shape.
He is a gross looking man. But, you know, it's just because he's much older than he tries to convince everyone he uh-huh. is. So he dresses much younger,
mm-hmm.
and he tried to act well, much younger. Hair,
lies about everything.
The long hair.
It's kind of like our POTUS.
Yeah.
And it might be around the same weight, too.
I would vote for Tommy Wiseau in a heartbeat. So 2020.
An alien overlord?
Yeah, yeah. I'm okay with that.
So, first off, for... those people out there, and absolutely not me, What is a line producer supposed to be?
Tell him, Ray.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, no, okay.
Honestly, I would imagine a line producer is more like an organizer, kind of gets the day lined up, the shots, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, in the book, Greg Sestero says that it was his job to, like, schedule auditions, and he just kind of was the harmonizer on set. He just tried to make sure things were going smoothly, because Tommy's an asshole. He's horrible to work for.
Oh, really?
And multiple people quit and, you know, got very upset with him over the course of the shoot, which we'll get into various specific things. But Greg was always there by his side trying to keep things going. And mostly because the movie doesn't really get into this, because I heard an interview with the screenwriters where they're like, we're trying to justify why Greg stays with him through all this. I was like, he pays him a shitload of money. Did you not read the entire book?
Yeah, you got to walk us through it.
He doesn't say the exact amount in the book, but he says it's enough for him to live in LA for like a year and get a car.
Wow.
That's how much he was paid to do the work.
He's paid handsomely, then. That's
yeah.
the word there.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it was 6 months in LA, but still, it was an extremely large amount of money that he would lose if he quit. So he just tries to make the process as smooth as possible for everyone as
That's
a
what you gotta do. I tell the people in my job all the time, you're gonna eat shit at every job.
Yeah.
You might as well eat it at a job that can pay you enough to live comfortably and not just exist.
I would sell my soul to be in a Tommy Wiseau movie. I don't care. It could take months. I could be berated. I just want to be there. And you hear so many people talk about, you know, The Room, and like celebrities talking about The Room and Tommy, and it's like, and a lot of them are like, man, I would have given anything to be there and see it happen firsthand. And I'm right there with them. I would love it.
It's like 9/11. Where were you when The Room was made? And why didn't you stop it? The reports.
Why didn't you stop it?
Well, through Bin Laden determined to film The Room in the U.S.
Through the book, everyone's pretty much like, this is never going to get seen by anybody. That's the thesis of the book. It's like, it's fine because no one's ever going to see this.
And then it takes the world by storm on basic cable where literally millions of people can see it.
Yeah. The cult Life's following is insane for this movie.
Which is another thing I had no idea about. Seeing it in the theater was pretty awesome, because the crowd saying the lines and running the scenes, literally.
Yeah, because there's a part where they're running around playing football in San Francisco, and the audience got up and ran laps around the theater. I don't know all of the traditions the audience
definitely
has.
Definitely the spoons.
The spoons. But you have to like know where the spoon cues is. Spoon cues are, because I never think to look for the spoon pictures, but all of a sudden there's spoons flying. Oh yeah, there's the frame picture of the spoon for no reason.
You know, some sort of chant they kept saying too. Not just when he was
When he's going to kill himself, they say do it.
But there was something else.
There's
too.
Also the goiter scene.
Yes,
most hilarious thing to watch.
Because Lisa is sitting at a weird angle, and so every time she speaks, this bulge in her neck pops out. Uh-huh.
And it's not a goiter, it's just a muscle.
It's just the way she's sitting.
Oh my god, throughout the time, whenever you see it, everyone goes, ugh.
Yeah, and it gets progressively like, ugh.
And I didn't know what the hell was going on at first. And then your mind started to sync them up together.
Uh-huh. Well, Joe, you told us what was going on.
Yeah, because you guys were like, what are they reacting to? And I was like, it's that throbbing in her neck when she talks.
And once you see, you can't look away.
Because I never noticed it until like this screening when people were going, ugh. I was like, what are they? Oh, it's the neck thing. They talk about this in the book. Because I had no idea what that was referring to. I never noticed it in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's another part that people didn't do, that when they're having Johnny's birthday party and they go up to the roof, there's a weird shot where Tommy like looks down at the bottom right-hand corner of the screen and like waves and smiles. Or smile, you know, and you're supposed to go down there and like wave at him.
Oh.
But I don't remember the other chance. There was a lot of people screaming, but he's your best friend.
Yeah.
Yes. That happened a lot.
And oh, hi, Denny. Anytime Denny comes in, the audience goes, oh, hi, Denny.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little surprised at the do it, because I didn't think he would actually kill himself. But I mean, I was expecting some. I don't know. That movie had no... It was just held together with nuts and gun. There's no narrative thrust, nothing.
So this will be fun. Ray, tell us the plot.
What do you think the movie's about, Ray?
Yeah.
It's about a guy working out his issues with women. or something.
No, that's the meta narrative.
That's true.
That's behind the scenes.
Okay.
What's the actual
this guy
who's
apparently the greatest human being on earth, as related to his girlfriend by her mom, of all people, at every available opportunity, is cheated on, so he's a cuckold. She cheats on him with his best friend, who fights meekly and then just starts giving in.
I'm glad you picked up on the fact that it's his best friend, because that is established in the movie, but
it's not made very clear.
Only 12 or 14 times.
It's so subtle. You know, I don't want it to go over anybody's head. And so, but she's presented almost as, I don't know, maybe a sociopath. She has no feeling. She feels no remorse for what she's doing at all.
Mm-hmm.
They have weird people just going in and out of the building. And at some point, it culminates in a party where secrets are revealed and the wimpiest, whitest fist fight I've ever seen. And then followed by a suicide, because you're supposed to love the guy so much that his death ruins everything. And then I guess you're supposed to hate both the both the friend and the lady. But then he turns on the lady, which I thought was weird.
So Johnny does?
Yeah. A little bit misogynistic.
Or Mark does.
Oh, Mark. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, what are their names? Do you know their names?
Well, it's Lisa and Mark, because you can't forget Mark. Oh, hi, Mark. and Johnny. I don't know if the mom was given a name. And, of course, Denny.
Claudette, I think, is the mother's name.
Peter.
Peter the psychiatrist.
Peter was totally random, and then he disappears and never shows up again.
Well, Peter, the guy who plays Peter, took the job on the stipulation, like, he had another acting job coming up in a few weeks. And Tommy was like, no problem, we'll have you done before then. And he's like, great. And then that his time ran out, they hadn't finished shooting all of his stuff. He's like, yeah, this has to be my last day. And they didn't, like, shoot the rest of his stuff. So they replaced him with another actor, another character. And that's the guy who comes into the birthday party and is like, what are you doing? Johnny's my friend. Like, we don't know who you are. That guy. I forget. He has a name, too. But.
Oh, Steven.
Steven.
Steven's the one that walks in on them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
And what's the girl, the other girl's name, who just comes in and starts making out with her boyfriend? Because that shit was weird.
That was, like, one of the funniest parts of this viewing. So, there's this random scene in the middle where these two new characters just walk in and start making out on
somebody else's apartment.
Yeah, it's Johnny and Lisa's apartment.
Yeah.
And then suddenly everyone's, like, I think that might be a gag where everyone starts shouting, who are you? Like, as the scene ends, Ray, like, is like, but no, seriously.
I need answers because nothing was making sense at this point.
And that just made me laugh so hard.
It's technically a fifth sex scene in the movie because she goes down on him and he has the weirdest look on his face.
That glee or whatever.
Yeah. That, like, was his cheeks keep puffing out and he's like, his eyes are crossing. He's like, no one gets blown like that.
He's never been blown.
Plus he starts like when she gets to his stomach.
Not even stomach, more like chest.
There's no way she's gotten his pants off and gotten his dick in her mouth fast enough for him to be making that much of a reaction.
He had the face of, oh, this is really happening. Yeah. I've waited my whole life. Yeah, I think that's what happened.
Michelle. And Mike, I believe.
And I did think Michelle was cute. Lisa wasn't horrible.
No, Juliet Danielle. Yeah, she's very attractive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the main selling point for her getting cast was she was willing to make out with Tommy Wiseau and get naked with Tommy Wiseau. Because I think the girl who played
Michelle
was supposed to be Lisa.
Yeah, I could see, like, out of the two of them, Michelle definitely has more of the leading female character look.
She does.
Compared to
She really does. I
Lisa.
Thought she'd play a bigger role.
Mm-hmm. But somehow that didn't work out for time reasons, or she didn't want to do it after the opening couple of days of rehearsal working with Tommy. So Lisa kind of mercurially inserted herself into the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but more power to her. It all worked out, I guess.
Does the book reveal how long it took him to write this? Because I can't, again, there's so much I refuse to accept with this, but I struggle with. I can't believe he spent that much time putting it together.
I don't think it was a crazy long time. I don't remember the book says exactly how long, but he was writing like 24 hours a day and would constantly scream out questions to Mark, like how long is a typical movie script and, you know, ideas and stuff.
So he had no film background before this? Was this just a lark for him, is what I'm trying to
figure out? Well, he wanted to be an actor. So he was trying to become a professional actor in Los Angeles and then got the idea just to make his own movie because he is, for some reason, independently wealthy.
Which is another question I asked during the movie.
Yeah, no one knows exactly where his money comes from. But the movie cost about $6 million to make, and he did it all himself.
$6 million? Are you serious?
$6
million. Mm-hmm. He's state-of-the-art dual camera technology.
Which he bought. He didn't, like, rent. He bought all the equipment. He
one built, for each ass cheek.
He built sets that do not need... He did not need to be built.
It was one in, like, the stand... I don't know film at all. Go figure.
Yeah, no, he had a film camera. Like, he shot on 35mm, and then he shot in HD.
Uh-huh.
Like, on digital HD. Which, as many people pointed out to him, you can't do both simultaneously because they're lit differently.
They sure are.
Which is why, maybe why the film looks so strange, because they brought in a new director of photography after the first one quit.
It does look very strange, now that you mention it.
Yeah.
Like, I thought maybe the frame rate was off or something when I was watching. I didn't even say anything to you guys, but it looks weird.
It's because they didn't know how to light it. He's like, how do you light this? And they're like, you know, you just do your best. Because it just doesn't work. Because, yeah, the first DP
just point the light at my ass.
there are a lot of fun quitting stories. I'm thinking of the script supervisor, though. The script supervisor who basically directed the film. He was there through most of the process, and he left because he had the opportunity to work with, like, Spielberg. Or with Spielberg's DP, like an award-winning DP who shot Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan and stuff like that.
Oh, the Janusz Kaminski guy?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
So he got a job offer from that, and he's like, I gotta go, I gotta take this, I gotta do it.
I mean, you got to. If it's Spielberg's DP versus... doing a DP with Tommy Wiseau?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't the DP. The DP quit because...
No, that was just a bad joke about a double penetration.
Okay.
That's all.
The DP quit a while earlier because he wanted Tommy to hire a real line producer. And he said, this is chaos. We need a real producer running things and making sure things are going smoothly. I'll give you till the end of the week and then I'm gone. And the end of the week got there and no one said anything. He said, did you hire a line producer? He said, no, then I'm gone. And he left.
Was this a clean set? I mean, were there hookups and stuff?
No mention of, like, behind the scenes romance of any kind.
Very weird, yeah. I guess I'm trying to find a deeper reason for him doing this. I just don't understand.
Sometimes life just doesn't have a meaning.
Tommy, that is true. But usually when you put so much effort into something and $6 million...
No, it's not this movie.
Yes, there's a lot. This movie is teaching me new lessons.
Well, Tommy did insist on rehearsing with Juliet a lot. So a lot of them, like, rehearsing, making out and stuff that.
God, that sounds so gross.
I know. Everyone was very uncomfortable about that, about filming the sex scenes, because he didn't close off the set. Like, anyone and everyone was encouraged to be there and be on set during the filming of the sex scenes. And the men got really angry because there's this woman there. She's willing to, you know, be naked on film and for this piece of shit. And he's just clearly taking advantage of that. And everyone is super pissed off. I'm surprised he didn't get his teeth kicked in during that.
Oh, God. Let's wanted to avoid it, but we're going to talk about it now. Let's talk about that sex scene.
You are my rose. You are my rose. You are my rose. That's the only song I know.
Yeah.
It's a different song for the Tommy-Lisa sex scenes, but...
I've been having the stupid underscore for the entire film running through my head.
How does it go?
Bum, 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 bum,
yeah.
Bum, 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 bum.
It's so weird.
It wasn't horrible.
Yeah. It felt like something that was in the public domain that they just took and threw in there.
Like Kirby Enthusiasm. It was, I think...
Original score?
Yeah, I think it was original score.
Hey, spared no expense.
Man.
It's probably John Williams did that.
Uncredited, yeah. Yeah.
No, it's some... because I looked it up, because I was like, okay, who actually
Danny
did
Elfman.
This? It's Mladen Milchevic.
Has he done any other film scores?
Up against Amanda...
Up against Amanda. That sounds hot.
Hmm.
My wife's Amanda.
It's like a lot of different, almost documentary sort of things that he's done.
So little, like, so he's got no budget.
Yeah.
No movies.
Mm-hmm. But, like, it's actually really nice. But anyway,
those the sex scenes
are horrible.
Horrible.
They look, like, so unnatural.
So unnatural. The kissing, everything.
Yeah, the kissing's weird. The fact that he's having sex with her belly button.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not her vagina.
And the thrusting. I had a real problem with the more repeated
thrusting. There's this weird shot from the side of him, like, curled over on top of her. And, like, his entire body convulsing as he thrusts into her. And it's deeply upsetting.
It's like he's throwing up.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it reminds me of.
It looks like a heave, yes.
He's heaving into her. And then the ADR. Oh, my God.
He's implanting his egg sac in her gullet.
All the ADRs up.
The asshugger.
A lot of the lines are ADR'd. Mm. Like,
yeah, the whole movie, it went shocking. Like, their lips are not lining
up. Yeah. A lot of it had to be re-recorded ADR afterwards.
Yeah.
Which I wonder if, like, anyone is voiced by someone who's not them in the movie, like a different actor.
Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
Like Hercules in New York.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sex scenes.
Yeah.
Well, the crazy thing about the sex scenes is that the second sex scene is the first sex scene redone, retooled, re-edited. It's the same shots. We get the same awful side thrust.
Mm-hmm.
The same heaving.
Yeah.
The same rose petals.
The same sheets. They didn't bother to wash the fucking sheets.
Narratively speaking, like, at that point, Lisa has already decided she does not love Tom anymore. She doesn't want to be with Johnny anymore. Maybe she's even started flirting with Mark by that point.
But oh, yeah.
He comes home. He didn't get his promotion. She gets him drunk and then, like, fucks him. You don't have to fuck him if you don't love him anymore. Like, I just love that dick. I just love fucking Johnny so much that even though
because
I hate him now,
being, yeah.
Even though I hate him now, I still need it until Mark slips it to me.
And why didn't they depict his not getting a promotion on screen? Again, it's just a total narrative failure.
Oh,
at every level. He just walks in. I didn't get it.
It's perfect. I don't know what you're saying.
They just used me. They already put my ideas into practice.
Right. I mean, I would have liked to have seen that. Just from a viewer standpoint, you show, don't tell.
What if he's actually... His job promotion stuff, and lack thereof, is kind of mirroring his personal life stuff. Sort of.
Maybe he's being used and taken advantage of.
I think a lot of it is autobiographical, and no one knows for sure because he's very private about that. But
so, where is he from again?
That's another question I asked in the theater because I couldn't place that accent, and he's a fucking weirdo, and I needed to know some answers.
That way, he could either avoid that country or go there immediately.
Yes.
The speculation is that he grew up in some Eastern European country, but then lived in Paris for a while.
Wikipedia
and so that's why he has
Texas
this
too. I don't know.
New Orleans.
Yeah. Okay. He also, when he came to America, he lived in New Orleans for a while.
Probably some shithole country.
No. The shitholes are only the brown ones.
Yeah. Just brown countries.
Yeah.
Tommy's clearly from a white country, so he's okay.
Yeah.
That hurt.
Sorry.
And then there's Mark's sex scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Which Greg Sestero has never watched.
Ooh.
Yeah, he won't. He either will close his eyes or step out of the theater during his sex scenes.
So was he there watching the room with you guys?
No. He talked for a bit at the beginning and did the little activities at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then as far as I know, stepped out of the hallway or went to the bar to get a drink to kill time until we were done.
God, I would have loved to. Like, I would have bought tickets for it and then gone out and gotten a drink.
If it was maybe like my second time seeing it and he was there, I might have dipped out for a while too, just see if I could talk to him for a minute.
I'm the same way. I mean, I don't like to. I mean, if I was an actor, I wouldn't want to watch my own scenes, but especially not a love scene. I remember telling Andrew after our first podcast, it took me a minute to even listen to it, the Last Action Hero one. And Andrew was like, "Well, I'm a narcissist. I listen to mine all the time." I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, that makes it easier." So now it's fun, but I couldn't imagine not just any sex scene, but a sex scene that bad in a movie that bad.
Yeah.
That'd be hard.
His sex scenes, despite them being on a stairwell, are actually better. Like
they actually have some chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still not lit well, not shot well.
Oh, no, it's
why better. Are they on a stairwell? Because the bed is like 10 feet further up the stairs and over. The second sex scene, they make it to the bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be so uncomfortable.
I can't remember if Sestero's acting was offensive to me. I don't think he was that bad.
No, he's not terrible. Remember.
No.
Like, he's got a look. I'm surprised he doesn't find more work.
Yeah, he worked as a model, and he had other acting jobs come up before The Room. I haven't seen him in much since The Room, but him and Tommy have a movie coming out. Credits.
In two parts?
Yeah.
Oh, two volume, because it's that epic.
Volume yeah. one coming this March, I think.
March yeah. 2018.
I remember leaning over to Joe and saying he looks like Jesus.
with the beard?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he cut it like halfway through the movie.
Is there a reason why he shaved his beard off?
Not that I'm aware of. Like, Tommy was very insistent about it, so he finally just caved and
maybe
did it.
Maybe we can just add way more subtext and thought into this movie. So he had to shave it because his character was conflicted, and he didn't like his reflection anymore, so he had to make a drastic change.
All right, I like this
because
coming up
because betraying
with
his best friend, you know?
Whipping out the head cannons.
Yeah.
I think...
Whipping out the head
No, fan wing. That's the word
I think he shaved because it makes him look younger, and he's acting like a child, and he's betraying his best friend like a young, stupid man would.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Johnny's done nothing but good things for him, whatever those
and
might
for
be.
Everybody. He's like a father to Denny, you know?
Oh, God.
26-year-old Denny?
His mouth is numb. You can't do that to him. You can't stop it.
Oh, Denny.
Yeah. God, Denny,
except for Tommy, is one of the older cast members in the movie.
Oh, my God. It's so awkward where they're like, you know, the first time we meet Denny, Tommy, or what's his name? Johnny. Johnny and Lisa are about ready to go up and do their...
Yeah, aren't they actually up there about to have sex? And then he just pops up?
No. Yeah, yeah.
No, not at first.
Oh, okay.
At first, yeah. He's like, you know, oh, we want some alone time. Like, yeah. They're trying their best way to be like, we want to have intercourse, because that's how they would say it. Oh, with my future husband and my future wife.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, God, I just had an epiphany.
What?
Tommy Wiseau hates the French language. He speaks it. He lived in France, but he's all about America. He wants people to believe he's an American.
Uh-huh.
So Greg Sestero speaks fluent French.
Uh-huh.
Because his mother's French,
mm-hmm.
which isn't in the movie, and that was disappointing to me. So when he first meets Tommy, he recognizes the vaguely French accent. He yells at him in French, and Tommy just kind of blows him off. And during a scene in The Room, he throws a French line out, and Tommy freaks the fuck out on him.
It's when
says,
he gets
no French in my movie. He doesn't use the word fiance because it's French.
Yeah.
It's always future wife, future husband. It's never fiance because that's a French word.
Exactly.
Wow, he's weirdo. Dumb.
Yeah.
It's so strange.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. I love this movie so much.
So,
But yeah, Denny wants to watch them have sex.
No, he wants to join them.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that they're just playing around or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, like, thank God, like, they decide to do that weird rose thing before... Or, like, the pillow fight, because Denny just creeps up there.
Yeah, they have the foreplay pillow fight, which everyone does.
Of course. And then, like,
5 minutes
Denny
later, he would have saw something totally different.
Oh, God. Yeah, he would have seen
Johnny's
like,
ass. Johnny's amazing
the
ass.
Cloaca. Denny is a creep.
Yeah,
he's creep.
Unbelievably creepy.
Probably got a hidden fridge or something in his house. We never see his place, but that's some
it's a murder den. It's a murder den for sure.
Yeah. For certain. I think we all could agree on that.
Johnny, do you know anything about soundproofing my kitchen? I like to cook extremely loudly, and I don't want to disturb anybody. Can I watch you and Lisa fuck?
Do you like fava beans, Johnny?
Can I borrow some sugar and some nice Chianti? Denny gets wrapped up in some drugs.
Oh, God, that's hilarious. Would you think in a normal movie that would somehow come back?
A lot of things would come back in a normal movie, like Claudette's cancer never comes back.
I think that one was the most hilarious thing to me. I've never seen
cancer.
So. Yes.
Came back.
I'm dying.
Yeah, I'm dying.
You're not dying, Mom. I just got the results of the test. I definitely have breast cancer. And then, like, the tagline for the movie, Lisa's like, oh, don't worry about it.
I don't want to talk about it.
No, I don't want
to
talk
that doesn't, about it. That doesn't have anything to do with me, so don't worry about it.
I told you she's a fucking narcissist sociopath, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how women are typically written by Tommy Wiseau.
Oh, God. Even in Neighbors?
They're either sycophantic or sex objects or evil.
I knew
or all of the above. Women.
I could tell.
Yeah.
Or literal witches.
Literal.
Yeah. In Neighbors, there's a literal witch.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. That's just lovely.
But she's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
she's not an evil witch. Mm-hmm. She's just a witch.
Mm-hmm. So Claudette's cancer doesn't come back. The drug dealing storyline.
Yeah. I love the scene with Chris R. and Denny.
Uh-huh.
Chris R. is our drug dealer, and he's got a gun. He's screaming at Denny for his money. He's like, "Did you give him drugs without getting money first? Because that's kind of on you, Chris R.
Right? What fucking dealer are you?
I thought maybe he gave Denny drugs to sell for him.
That's the only way.
Denny used all the drugs?
That's possible.
Maybe, and didn't have the money?
He used it on the hookers he killed.
Yeah!
You know, keeps him docile.
Yeah, keeps him docile.
He didn't want any fight out of
them. And then he realized he just had to kill them, and that keeps them very docile. During his escapades. Uh-huh. Sexcapades.
Yeah.
And then he dry heaves on them.
Yeah.
Lisa was supposed to complete his collection, but he didn't quite get there.
Yeah, he could never get close enough to her because she was too busy.
And he tried a couple
times.
Having
sex with everyone else.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the scene where he confesses his love to Johnny was like, "I think I'm in love with Lisa. Do you hate me?" And Johnny's like, "Don't worry about it. Lisa loves you too. She loves everybody. It's okay to love somebody and not love the." I don't know what he says in the scene. It's all nonsense.
Wait, don't you have the script?
Yes, I do.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I might need to see that, because
I've never read it, actually, and I know it's different from the final movie. It's crazy to me I haven't actually read it.
I wonder, is it even in screenplay format? Everything else is so unprofessional.
It's probably it looks pretty good from what I remember. I flipped through it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was probably shorthand or some shit.
It's all handwritten. Yeah. It looks like the Republican tax bill.
Shit in the margins, yeah.
Yeah, just scribblings in the margins. Yeah. I can't read this. It's law now, motherfuckers. So yeah, I have the script, and because he did readings from it, like I said, and the scenes he chose, not in the movie. I really wanted to go through and read it because there was a different Chris R. There was a different Chris R. scene they shot, and then they wanted to redo it on the roof for some reason. It was the exact same scene with like Denny playing basketball. But he was in an alley where it kind of makes sense, going to a roof where it doesn't make any sense at all. And then Chris R. comes up there and screams about money, and Johnny and Mark chase him off.
No, they take him to the police.
Police station is apparently like right across the street because they're back in the same pretty building. Quickly. Yeah.
There's a lot of shit in that building.
There's a police precinct on the third floor.
I was amused by the fact that Claudette came up there to chew Denny out too.
Yeah.
Like, I really loved him. And
she has like the same line over and over again. Yeah. Like, why would you do this? You're not my mom. Fuck you.
Yeah. She could have at least tied it back to herself a little bit. How could you do this? I have breast cancer.
Some of the casting in the movie is fantastic. Because Zac Efron plays Chris R. And he's like between takes going, "Motherfucker!" And he's getting into character like, "I'm gonna fucking kill you, motherfucker!" he's awesome. Josh Hutcherson plays Denny. Because Josh Hutcherson is like 26 at least. Mm-hmm. Playing this kid. But he's got like a baby face going on.
This is in The Disaster Artist.
In The Disaster Artist, yes. All three hosts of How Did This Get Made are in The Disaster Artist.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Because I was going to ask about them.
Yeah.
Because it seems like this movie...
Oh, yeah, they've done an episode.
...is what gave birth to that whole thing.
Yeah, they did an episode where they interviewed Greg Sestero about all of it. And another guy who's a big room aficionado.
Who plays Claudette?
No one.
She's not in the movie?
I mean, she's in the movie. I just didn't recognize the actress playing.
Oh, you mean... Okay, yeah. Not in the movie.
Or at least I can only picture Claudette in the room. Lady. I can't... They should have got the same lady. Yeah. Of course they should have got the same lady.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it's been like 14 years. Maybe she just wasn't up for it. She has breast cancer.
It beat me to it. That's exactly what it was.
But June plays Michelle, or the actress who plays Michelle. Paul plays the DP, the director of photography. And Jason plays one of the guys who sells him his cameras. He's like works for the production company that he's affiliated with to make all this.
Who plays Lisa?
God, she looks familiar, but I don't know her name. I've definitely seen her in other things.
Only there were a database.
If only there were some sort of database of internet movies that we could look
some
up.
Sort of repository of information.
At our fingertips.
Yeah.
Made
in a sweatshop, preferably.
I think really the only weak link for me is Dave Franco as Greg.
He plays Greg?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's
he looks like him. I mean, he's shorter than Greg Sestero, clearly, but he's also kind of sycophantic, where he's like goes along with anything Tommy wants or does or says, and it's never established that he's getting paid an incredible amount of money.
That's not established in the movie.
It's not established in the movie. Maybe, so I was like, it's really hard to understand why Greg. Is
a comedy?
Okay, yeah, yeah, it's a comedy.
Good. So, Ari Grainer?
Oh, that name sounds real familiar.
I don't know the name. I know her face.
Like Whip It.
I've seen Whip It.
And
it sounds real
familiar. The Kroll Show, Bad Teacher.
So yeah, I've seen her in various little things, but I can't place her.
And Jackie Weaver was Claudette.
Let me see her picture. Okay, so I have seen her in other stuff too. Just when I picture her in the disaster, all I can think is the woman who plays Claudette in The Room. I definitely have cancer.
This movie is great.
How much of the dialogue is improv? Because again, I just
none of it.
With it sounding as stilted as it is, that doesn't shock me.
No, so much. Yeah, it's all
for
it's
me. All again, scripted. I'm just looking for coherence and the stuff like her. Just it feels like she just ad-libbed. I have breast cancer.
Sometimes the world, like the universe, started from nothing.
we keep coming back to that. I just
like sometimes it just.
I'm just struggling with it, Andrew. I just struggle with the idea that people can pour that much resources into something that does nothing.
Yeah, because Tommy.
Look at the Iraq War.
Well, shit, touche. Touche.
Yeah, because Tommy was married to his script. He didn't want any deviation from his lines.
What a dictator.
And there's some stuff, obviously, didn't get shot and had to be changed at the time, but it was still, like,
The
way he wanted to go.
You mentioned about the scenes that they read that are not in the movie?
I don't remember what they were about.
Do they add anything? I mean, do you remember...
I feel like there might have been... I feel like one of them might have linked two things that were previously, like... In the movie, you don't know what that connection is, and there's a scene missing there. But I don't remember what it was in relation to.
Oh, God. All the times they play football and catch.
That's another horrible thing they chanted in the live, is every time someone throws a football, they're like, one, two, three.
They're counting along. Up to seven.
You kind of had to.
There was one, there was one scene where they're throwing the football around a lot, and there wasn't any counting during that scene.
He does that. He throws around... balls in the neighbors too. The basketball.
Yep, a lot of basketball play.
Maybe he feels that's American.
It's a very American thing where we go out and play catch it 4 feet away.
Yeah.
Oh God,
what a weird.
By the way, listener, we've been throwing a football around quietly through this entire recording.
It's never stopped.
We're all inches from each other.
25. 26.
And literally be handed to each other. Yeah.
19.
Pi. Square root. Is that a number? Epsilon.
I. And Rassilon. You gotta put that in.
I is an imaginary number, Andrew. Grow the fuck up.
First time seeing it, see, that still baffles me. Like, you're baffled at how this movie exists, and I'm baffled at the fact that that was the first time you've seen it. Like...
How have you known me all these years and we haven't watched
that
The Room?
Number,
because I usually avoid... I mean, if it wasn't for bad movie night... I'm reminded of when we watched the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes!
That experience was so painful. I don't think we saved it.
No, it was it's so fucking it was terrible. Fun,
but it was really unpleasant.
Yeah, and, that one's hard. That's hard to get through. Hard.
Like that first 10 minutes when we just sat there with that fucking Wookiee speak going on. and when The Room ended, we stand up, I'm putting my coat on, I turn to Joe, and he's just like, white people, am I right? It is mildly offensive that something so bad at every level can still manage to become a success with this white director.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I mean, he has made millions from this utter trash, and I'm just baffled. Because again, I have to feel like maybe it's self-parody, maybe he's making some sort of commentary, or maybe he just threw a bunch of shit at a wall, but because he had a little bit of money, and he's white, and it caught a fire... And he's made millions from this absolute horseshit.
There absolutely has to be a equally terrible movie with a black director and a black cast that no one's ever heard of.
Oh, I can think of a few. my mom, a cousin used to live with us when I was growing up, and we had the movie store, Movies Unlimited. This was before Blockbuster ate up everything. So she would send him sometimes to go to the store. It was just walking distance. And he came back with one time that I actually found on YouTube. It was called Super Soul Brother. and it was so bad. She cussed his ass out about bringing this shit. She gave him the money to go get the movie. Why the hell did you bring this shit? Because he would go get the stuff, all the blaxploitation movies. So they the shit had Jim Brown and Fred the Hammer Williamson and stuff. But particularly, there's a real bad movie in the 90s, maybe around 97. You remember Master P, the rapper?
Mm-hmm.
He started making his own movies. And y'all might have missed that because it was urban audience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was movie, way too white for that.
Yeah. His first movie was called I'm About It, because that was part of the slang. You know, like, I'm down for the cause, whatever, I'm about that life. It is horrible. We saw it when we moved to Michigan in 1997, in that summer, because it was a phenomenon. Because what he did was promote it on every album. So every liner, and Master P's whole claim to fame was that he could mass produce music and get the shit out there. And he would just outwork the competition. So he had, it'd be like if everybody you've ever podcasted with released an album. You know what I mean? So there's your album, Andrew's, Johnny Stahl's, Johnny Blaze, Phil, mine. And you just bombard the whole audience. But in each one of our albums, you promote this bullshit movie because it's coming soon. And it was viral before, before viral really took off with the internet. And so that movie came out. And when I say it's horrible, it is horrible. I could never watch it again. I don't even think ironically.
Challenge accepted.
We have to find it first.
It's on YouTube. I'm definitely going to watch it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm about it.
By the way, you can check the show notes.
Yeah, we'll find it, I'm sure.
Find it on your phone.
But God almighty, yes. And it did actually, I mean, so he kind of undercuts my own thesis there. But he wasn't, it sold a lot. He made a lot of money from it. And as a result, he got a distribution deal for his next couple of movies. I want to say it was with Universal or something. So then he made I Got the Hookup. And a few others. They were all trash, but eventually I just stopped. And movies like that is why I don't really put myself through the agony of bad movies, unless it's with friends or live, because the live experience helped with the room. And did anybody else get vibes from Lisa and Michelle, too? I legit, when I was watching it, thought that they were about to have a sex scene.
Oh, man. Missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Because all the women in the Neighbors are bisexual.
Mm-hmm. I saw it. I mean, I thought it was coming because the movie scene at that point was so trashy and sleazy that anything was possible.
Michelle and Lisa's relationship is strange because Lisa tells Michelle that she doesn't love John anymore and she's cheating on him with Mark. And Michelle doesn't have any problem with that. She's like, oh, you're so bad.
Totally immoral.
Oh, my amoral, God. I'm so excited for you.
Yeah.
And then, like, she has a moral compass later when there's men around and, like, watching her, I guess.
It's all an act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, you can't do this to Johnny. Wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe that's what Wiseau was saying. You can't trust these hoes.
Yeah. It actually surprises me that he wanted to do sex scenes with them. That's how much he hates them. You know?
I'm surprised that Claudette's trustworthy. Like, she's through the entire movie constantly going, like, but you should stay with Johnny.
But she's
trustworthy
because she worships Johnny. That's the only reason. And for all we know, she could be lying about her breast cancer. So, she's probably a lying whore, too.
Or she was in her youth.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now Chris R. works for Claudette. That's why she was on Diddy's ass so bad on the roof. She was trying to gaslight him. Why would you do this? Why, you know, to keep him from talking.
That does explain why she was way over the top protective about him.
Way
it's all
over
show.
The top. Yeah,
I like it. I like it.
There are so many scenes where someone just comes over for like 2-3 minutes, and then they're like, "Oh, I have to go."
I struggle with that.
Uh-huh.
I'm a better writer than that. I mean, I don't write like all the time at all. I've probably written in years, but I know I could construct a story better than that.
Yeah,
I just know I can.
Well, you got.
We've done that shit with our guilty, you know, our guilty picks at the end of the
show.
Yeah,
that's a creative thing. But yeah,
Jesus, it's just so pedestrian, everything about it. Denny would come in the room and then leave 2 minutes later.
Uh-huh. Or my favorite is Lisa would talk, like, bring up a subject, and then someone would, you know,
give her some shit, give her some pushback. Response,
and then she's like, I don't want to talk about it. You brought it up.
And then, like, there was a scene where Claudette and Lisa come into the apartment. They, like, sit down and have a conversation for 60 seconds. And then Claudette's like, all right, I'm really busy. I have to go.
Yeah.
It's like, you just got here.
It's like, doesn't he know how to...
And it would be one thing if they both entered the room, like, as if it were a... Like, they went out and visited and did stuff.
I thought they did enter at the same time for that one. Because that's the scene where Johnny's on the stairs eavesdropping on them.
Mm-hmm.
Where she admits to cheating on him. Uh-huh. And Claudette's like, you should stay with him and all this. And then they leave.
And then the Mission Impossible scene.
Johnny's like, how could they? I'll show them. I'll record everything. Like,
you don't need to record it.
Like, he needs evidence of her infidelity.
Yeah. Who's he going to show the evidence to?
The police?
Right. My girlfriend's such a whore.
He's like, yeah, sorry, buddy, but this isn't illegal. You should just, you know, break up with her. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't understand. Yeah, God.
Or ask your manservant, Denny, to just kill her. That was dark. I'm sorry. It's the dental work.
But it's true. Blame everything on the dental work.
But it's like people comparing Kevin Spacey to Joss Whedon. It's like, Joss Whedon cheated on his wife. It's a terrible thing to do, but it's not illegal. Kevin Spacey, like, sexually molested a kid.
Oh, did you hear the latest?
No.
Oh, my God. I just saw it yesterday. Apparently, the security firm that had the job first, they lost the contract because he didn't, apparently anyway, allegedly didn't want any black security guards around his trailer. He said, I don't want any niggas on my set.
Spacey?
Spacey! I couldn't believe it! I just saw it yesterday. Now again, allegedly.
Oh, that guy, I used to have so much respect for that man.
I hope it's not true, but I mean, he's already trash at this point. Yeah. We have to make our peace with the fact that most of our favorite actors, creators, everything. They're just trash.
It's so unfortunate.
I have a friend who likes to bag on Whedon. She's never watched his stuff. Loves the Avengers. Has never watched any of his other stuff, but likes to bag on him because others like it. Kind of mm-hmm. like I used to do with Harry Potter and all that yeah. shit before mm-hmm. I started watching him. So when the affair came out, that was, to her, the ammo to undercut the feminism from Buffy.
Yeah.
But you've never seen Buffy. And as, you know, a fan, I'm thinking to myself, does it really bother me? Does it affect his work at all? Nah. You know,
I don't know anything about him and his wife and his relationship.
Exactly.
But as long as the sex is consensual, like, my bar is kind of low for
it's
what I'm going to
be. Pretty low, yeah. I don't get the impression like, he was taking
like
pussy.
He might be a piece of trash cheating on someone in that sense, but not yeah, like...
but that's for his wife to judge. Uh-huh.
And I mean, let's be honest, shit, MLK cheated on his wife.
Yeah,
since,
a lot.
Since it's a little bit mm-hmm. after MLK Day here, mm-hmm. there are no real heroes, I mean... Mm-hmm. We all got shit on our shoes.
Humans have flaws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but I'm assuming that was all consensual, too. It's mm-hmm. these people who come out with, you know, sexual assault allegations that, like, those people are dirtbags. Like, I don't care about Trump's affair.
Mm-hmm. I don't either.
I care about the woman he raped in front of a bunch of witnesses yeah. and then intimidated into shutting the fuck up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I care about Trump, everybody's reaction to shit Trump does, just in relation to... if it were Obama. That's all that runs in my head and yeah. stuff because, or even
Bill Clinton. Yeah, Obama wears a tan suit and he's the fucking Antichrist.
Or eats arugula.
Or bows to a Japanese mm-hmm. head of state.
He was apologizing for America. And then meanwhile, this guy campaigned on, your entire country is shit, but let me fix it.
Yeah.
And, just imagine if Bill Clinton or Obama, if it came out that they had an affair with a porn star weeks after their wife gave birth.
Oh, God. It would have been merciless.
A guy I follow on Twitter says that the press would have drawn up the articles of impeachment themselves. And yeah. You know?
But I mean, Clinton was basically impeached for getting a blowjob.
Basically. It's the Wiseau effect. Maybe Trump is related to that. That you can literally... because it's kind of a lesson I took from the room. You can fail at every single thing you attempt and still manage to become a success from it.
Yeah.
No. Do not make Trump... and why so related. I had one pure thing in this world.
I had to take that impression of it, man, because
no.
I can't account for it any other way. How can these people fail so spectacularly and so obviously to people with, you know, intelligence and decency? I'm sorry, Andrew.
No, I have faith. I just
don't understand it.
I don't think they're the same person.
No, I don't think they're the same
person. There's a similar distortion of reality around them. Anyway, let's talk about the room.
Oh, I see what you did there.
We're getting further and further off topic, and then I want to talk about the room.
You have some alcohol in here that I could just, like, pound right now.
I'm sorry. I fucked up Whistle for you, man. He's not a tyrant, though, Andrew. He's probably... Well, actually,
sounds like he is.
I was just about to say, actually, he is sounding a little tyrantish.
He has assholic episodes.
You know the similarity I see there when she told me about him being an asshole? It's small man syndrome. Like, he's small on the inside or something. And he needs to control every aspect. You can't ad-lib. You can't speak French. You must show your tits while I thrust against your belly and all this type of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, the auditions were insane, too. The auditions, especially when he was auditioning the women, it was a lot of him, like, berating them, screaming at them.
During the audition?
To see if they could handle it kind of thing, if they could stay in character.
jumping out at them.
Does Johnny do any of that? He doesn't yell at... Well, I guess he does. You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Yeah,
that was my favorite thing in the entire theater, though.
Because we all joined in for his James Dean moment.
And coincidentally, that was the clip I saw from the room. When you told me you had tickets, I was like, boy, I don't know. I saw a clip on YouTube just the other day comparing it to James Dean, in fact. And I was like, wow, that looks awful. And so I went anyway.
And aren't you glad you did?
I think I am. I mean, you kind of have to say you did, because again...
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, you know, you want to be around for events like Pearl Harbor.
That way you it's a have cinematic that, Pearl Harbor.
Like, that way you have the ability to say, at least I've seen something.
Yeah.
You
know?
I lived. I saw the room.
We survived.
We will rebuild.
It's horrible, though. I mean, it is justifiably horrible, but...
it isn't Pearl Harbor.
Right. No death.
Or 9/11, you want to go? Want to take that one out, too?
No.
It's one of the towers, at least.
It's building seven.
It's the first tower before.
I'm horrible. I'm a horrible human being.
It's been 15, 16 years. Get over it, America. Oh. Like you got over slavery. Just get over it.
Oh, good times. This has gone in a lot of weird directions.
They do. Well, we kind of have to, because there's no coherence in the room, so there shouldn't be any in this conversation either.
By the way, how's your sex life?
How's your sex life?
It's slowed a little bit since marriage. You know how it is.
Yeah.
No.
I don't. Well, actually, it's slowed since getting River. Because she cannot bear to be left alone. So
that bitch.
Yeah, no, she's the worst. She's a real cock block. We haven't talked about my favorite scene in the movie. Flower store.
Oh, this is actually the one part of the movie that's actually really, really good.
It is. And how terrible it is.
It's like cinematographically good. It's well put together.
It has a certain structure.
Show your work. Okay.
Good establishing shot. The camera work is actually really good. You take away the acting. Take away the acting. Take away the plot. If you just look at the bare bones, like, panning
like
to
film
show
school 101,
the... Yeah,
he walks this is in the very door, much... It pans over to...
Uh-huh. Okay. He's in the same spot.
It is some pretty complicated blocking for him to do, knowing how hard it was for him to do everything on this
movie.
Maybe
it's something that was done before that other guy left, you know, in the first week or so. It's not shot chronologically, is it?
No.
Okay, good.
That scene was shot late in the process.
Oh, well, there goes my theory.
Because they shot a bunch of stuff in San Francisco, and that was it. And the coffee shop scene was that. And them running around playing football.
Maybe it got better. I mean, you know, at that point, maybe he's a slightly better filmmaker.
Well, again, he doesn't really direct any of it.
Is Neighbors well put together at all?
No.
Is it like The Room?
Yeah.
No.
It's different bad.
The Room is much more polished, I would say. I know, right?
Well, 'cause I feel like he actually spent the money on, like, a creative team and an editor and... Uh-huh. You know, he actually put the money into putting it together. The Neighbors, man, just feels like he shot it. He did everything himself.
Let's put it this way. In The Room, how many times did you have to plug your ears because of how bad the sound quality was?
Oh, boy.
You're coming on to an episode when we're discussing The Neighbors. We have an episode for you.
I've heard the first one that you guys did, and I was like, that's another reason I kind of was resistant to the idea of The Room. I was like, this sounds horrible.
But The Neighbors is very much like open public access television sort of quality to it.
Yeah.
Ooh, and those are bad. That might be. Mm-hmm. That's a real good description.
And then it, like, the sound quality
except
is
that
horrible.
It aspires to be more. Is that kind of like. It doesn't even aspire. This guy here, man. A guy with no qualifications. He's fucking Trump, Andrew. I just realized. No qualifications. Wealth of questionable origins. And he's allowed to do whatever the fuck he wants, and nobody questions it. And then the rest of us have to deal with the...
Hates the French.
Horrible consequences. Oh, my God. Abuses women, verbally and on set.
Not a single person of color.
Not a single.
In The Neighbors, there are people of color.
Okay.
Yeah. But
and
in The Room,
drug dealers
no.
Are
no, they're just fucking insane.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Oh, well, we could talk about how The Room does not take place in The Neighbors universe, though.
I was going to ask you that. That was actually a question coming.
Do you know why it can't, Andrew?
Why?
Because in The Neighbors, they watch The Room on TV.
Damn it. I hate when that happens. That undercuts everything right there.
Yep.
Damn it.
Ha ha!
But.
Okay, I'm willing to hear your theory on how they can actually exist in the same universe.
And I have something similar but unrelated to when you finish it.
So, I still think that they're working off the history of the neighbors, though.
Okay.
Like, because if you look at, take a look at, like, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. They show Halloween.
The commercial for Halloween, they sure do.
I think when you write stories and things... Oh boy, this is getting really... I will figure this out. I will figure it out before the next episode of our Neighbors.
Okay, so come back for the...
Wait, Neighbors is ongoing?
Yeah. We do one podcast per episode.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Because there's a lot to unpack. Can we talk about how Mark almost murders Peter?
Oh, yeah.
Because they have a scene in Peter's apartment where Tommy or Johnny's talking to Peter about he thinks Lisa might be cheating on him. And all of this, but he's going to forgive her and see how it goes. And Mark and Denny show up.
And Mark talks about how there's this married woman that he's been seeing.
Yeah. Oh,
my God. That was so...
Awful anecdote. It was like, she's gorgeous, but she's crazy or something like that. Uh-huh. It was like, he throws around all these buzzwords about women being crazy and bad.
And then Tommy at some point says, but you're my best friend, so...
Yeah.
Something.
I'm pretty sure he says a couple times that Johnny's his best friend during the first sex scene with Lisa. Yeah. He definitely says it in the lead up to the first sex scene,
uh-huh.
where he's like, "What are you doing? Johnny's my best friend. I got to get out of here." And then she's like, "Can we have sex though?" And he's like, "Yeah, right." That's all the convincing it takes for him to betray his best friend.
I say meekly. He fought so meekly.
But then him and Peter go up to the roof. Or he's up on the roof smoking pot,
because
he can't smoke in his apartment for some reason. And Peter comes up there and is like, "You're the one fucking Lisa, aren't you?" And he's like, "What?" And he almost throws Peter off the roof. just for accusing him of something he's actually doing.
Yeah.
and then he pulls it back. He's like, "Sorry, like that's okay. No, don't worry about it."
Maybe that's why we don't see Peter anymore. Forget about that actor behind the scenes stuff. He just doesn't want to be friends with
Peter. Peter's anymore. Just not friends with any of these people anymore.
He's like, these people are crazy. Yeah.
He saw the shit in Denny's fridge and then, he was almost thrown off the roof. And
he probably ended up in Denny's fridge.
He probably did. You're right.
Yeah.
But he's a psychologist. He can recognize unhealthy relationships. He's like, all of my friends suck. I should probably not be around them anymore. Plus, we played football and they pushed me and I fell to the ground. So I'm going to go.
I wonder,
does
that universe, or, you know, do they realize Johnny's that he's a foreigner? Remember I said that about Arnold Schwarzenegger movie?
No.
I didn't think so either.
No.
I think that he's not an American as apple pie.
Yeah, he's not a foreigner.
No one recognizes that Johnny has an accent in the reality of the room.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Okay, so I want to talk about the screening really quick that we saw.
Yes.
Before... the room started.
Yes.
There were these explosions, much like what happens in the between shots of the Neighbors DVD. Like, there are these, like, just explosions that happen every once in a while.
Yeah, like these weird CG...
Mm-hmm.
On the DVD itself?
Point-and-click explosions.
Mm-hmm. And in it...
You could probably find this video on YouTube, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But... It's a bunch of, like, buzz phrases.
Like, you thought I was a joke. Shame on you.
You thought there was no script. Shame on you. You thought we didn't use real cameras. Shame on you. That just, like, shows a picture of the dual camera rig. State-of-the-art equipment. Shame on you.
Yeah.
And it's
each
it's
one's gotta, punctuated by an explosion.
It's got to be, like, 30 things it says, all punctuated with an explosion and shame on you. Right before you're going to watch his movie that you paid to come and see, mm-hmm. that you like.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, fuck you, asshole. Shame on you.
It's so
they are all paying to watch my shit movie.
Well, I was like, yeah, I mean, it really goes to show, like, Tommy can do no wrong in our eyes.
He can do no wrong.
He can berate the audience for a full 3 minutes before his movie starts. And we're like,
and
yay!
In the footage before that, at the other screen, he literally berated the audience. What did he keep saying?
Next question.
Yeah. He was doing a Q&A. And,
and people
he would answer something really quickly. About a sequel to The Room? Yeah, maybe. Next question.
People weren't asking, like, mean questions, like, why are you such a shitty composer?
Right.
That was Freudian for me.
That's what Andrew asks himself every morning in the mirror.
Right before he spits at his reflection.
Shame on you.
No, like, why are you such a shitty director? They never did anything like that. It was all stuff like, you know, so...
Innocuous questions.
Yeah, like, yeah. Would you ever direct a Marvel movie? Or would
you would you ever want to do a superhero movie? And he said, yeah, Fantastic Four would be his pick if he ever did a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm. And things like that. But throughout it, is like,
by the really way, short- Tommy Wiseau's Fantastic Four, I'm completely on board with. Oh, let's make that happen.
Yeah.
Now Disney has Fantastic Four back. It's a poison property. They shouldn't even work it into the MCU. Uh-huh. Give it to Tommy. Let him do
Fantastic
it.
Fantastic Horror.
It'll take 6 years to make, and who gives a shit? Just do it. Mm-hmm. What do you care? Bring back the same cast. I like that cast in the last movie.
But just let him do it. No, I thought you meant the original
Fantastic. Fuck, yeah. Bring back...
The Roger Corman?
No, the 2000s. Yeah. Bring back Jessica Alba and the and the team for a Tommy Wiseau... Although Alba would never do it.
One of each. Or one from each.
None of them would ever do it, yeah.
So, because Tommy Wiseau would play Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you have Tommy. Doesn't he already play him in the room?
So you have Tommy as Mr. Fantastic, Jessica Alba.
And then...
Michael B. Jordan. No, wait, he's of color.
Yeah, can't have that.
So. Oh, plus him and... Well, okay. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know
what you're... the old night, like the one that didn't get released.
I'm thinking that. The one in the 70s, I think. Uh-huh. That's the Roger Corman one.
Yeah.
That's actually really good.
He answered Roger all those questions borderline hostile.
Yeah, he's kind of off-putting as a person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he knows everyone's there to make fun of the movie. And, like, that's the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I get that.
So I feel like he's a little defensive of it. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he put out a thing. It's like when I bought the script, it's because I saw a commercial. It was like, how dare you say the room had no script. Here it is, bitches. And I was like, can I buy this somewhere? Go to this website, buy the script for The Room, the dark comedy.
Yay! I was surprised, too, after the movie, I asked you, did the Disaster Artist book split the friendship there? And you said, no, they're still friends, they're still cool. And then we saw the trailer for the next movie anyway, after The Room. I was like, oh, okay. That's interesting.
Something tells me, Tommy Wiseau is... not a director, not an actor. He's one of those avant-garde performing artists who's completely in on it. He made this film. I think Sestero's in on it too. He made this film so Sestero could write the book on the Disaster Artist. That way it could be made into someone. He knew someone would end up picking up the Disaster Artist as a movie. Mm-hmm. So then he would end up getting an Oscar that way. But that way he can prove that all art is shit.
I'm on board with that big time. Because that might be the deeper meaning I keep searching for this
guy. Yeah, I think people keep trying to sell Wiseau as like an Andy Kaufman character.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think
so. Like he's always playing three-dimensional chess. Who else do they say that about? POTUS.
Yeah, but POTUS playing three-dimensional chess.
No, I mean, like, in Washington, checkers. They always try to... they write him like checkers. He's planning things.
Just a straight line.
Yeah, it's a straight line. Like, I can't jump with the one dimension. Wrong.
I hate this game.
I love it, though, Andrew. I think it makes sense. Because that's kind of what I keep assuming from this. Because, you know, Kaufman would do that endless kind of joke shit where he'd always be in character. He'd always be on. Mm-hmm. And I hate that, by the way. Because I hate method acting in general.
Yeah, take that, whoever method acts.
Take that, Jim Carrey.
Take that, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right, it's that's so the unnecessary. Big method
actor. But Jim Carrey did the Andy Kaufman Man on the Moon Netflix thing.
I haven't watched it yet, but it is in my queue. It sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Right. I hate that shit. Because it's like they give artists certain license to do that kind of weird shit. And like you said, it can prove all artists shit. It can. Dude, and I was an artist.
They should do whatever they want. I don't care about that.
That's true.
They're not hurting anybody to approach a character by actually experiencing what they experience. I don't care.
I just don't like that part of method where, you know, you treat people offset like shit too. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when the cameras are not.
I mean, just don't be an asshole about it. You can act any way you want.
But then you aren't method acting if you are acting as an asshole on screen.
Right. And, you know, Franco directed this movie as Wiseau. Like, he was always in character. Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, of course, it's Franco. Something that really excites me, though, is that they're bringing The Room to Broadway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Broadway musical.
I'm not sure. Did they say musical?
I guess I just assume musical. How is it not a musical?
How do you how do you not emphasize the absurdity of this with a musical?
Because they certainly had the song at the beginning of the screening.
Because it's Tommy Wiseau.
I imagine. Okay. I mean, I guess I don't know what to expect.
He's going for an EGOT. Emmy with the room, or Emmy with the neighbors.
Grammy.
He'll come out
maybe
with some
he should,
album.
Maybe he should record the disaster artist and read the audio.
Oh man, he'd probably win. He would win a Grammy for that. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Greg Sestero does the reads the audiobook, and he's really good at it. He does a great Tommy impression.
By the way, that's pretty offensive that the fact that Wiseau is that close to an Oscar because Franco played him or Golden Globe, wherever the hell he just won.
It was Golden Globe. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. It's like he's this close to greatness.
Yeah.
By being a spectacular failure. I just.
That close and that far away. I mean, let's be serious.
That's true, but he'll stay in the public consciousness now in a way that most failures never could even hope.
Is there anything else about the room you guys wanted to bring up? Because we're going to have to wrap up here soon.
Part of the problem of being in the theater was that I couldn't take notes the way I wanted to. Because I didn't want to have my phone. Even though we were in the back, nobody would have seen my phone, but.
We were sitting next to two people, but, you know, we were all giving the movie shit, and they were joining in.
Oh, that guy was great. Out. And then when you told him I had never seen it before, he was like, oh. Bring him in. So I didn't get as many. Like, there's a lot of stuff I don't remember until we started talking about it. The song at the beginning, though. I mentioned it a second
ago. Oh, there was also, like, fake trivia at the beginning of the movie.
I missed that. I think that was when Andrew and I went.
You guys went to get more popcorn. Mm-hmm. So you might have seen some of them, but it was like movie mistakes, looking up what Denny from The Room looks like now, which I did. He doesn't look bad. And there was like, tonight's film is set in San Francisco. If you keep a keen eye out, you can notice some subtle hints.
Oh, God. I love the establishing shots in this. The go, 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 go as the camera is panning across the Golden Gate
Bridge. That's the other chanting,
That is what
the
it was.
The insanely long shot of the Golden Gate Bridge, yeah.
All of the scenes are about 10 seconds too long. Like, there are like just these long, lingering shots. And I love, like, when he's setting up the recording device. They show every single step.
He walks all the way across the room and gets out the tape recorder and hooks it up to the phone.
It's so bad. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in screenwriting books I read, they say you're supposed to come into a scene as late as possible and leave as early as possible. And he just violates every norm in cinema. Ugh.
We also forgot his chicken noises.
Oh, cheep, 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 cheep. It's like Arrested Development. And
nobody got it right.
What is it?
I like Lindsay's the best though. Cha chi cha. She can do this thing with her hand. Cha chi. What the hell is it? A cha chi.
Cheep, 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 cheep. And I love that other characters do that as if that's what you do when you're calling someone a chicken.
Cheep, 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 cheep.
This is a real American movie. We do cheep, cheep, cheep.
It's avant garde.
We don't need to waste time with all the stupid plots and thread lines. We just do it. It's good. It'll be so emotional.
You suddenly went to like stereotypical Mexican. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think you know accents, but neither does Tommy, so that's okay.
I was gonna say
But then if he made it that long ago, he can't be doing the Kaufman. That makes me sad.
It would be such a long con.
Because, Disaster Artist book was just published in 2013. I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too long a con. God damn it.
I mean, when
Casey... Ray's over here writhing in pain.
When Joaquin Phoenix and Casey Affleck made that documentary about him going crazy, Casey Affleck, like, the day it came out, was like, no, it's all a joke. Like, instantly. They didn't even try to pull the wool over anyone's
eyes.
At
all.
Did it? I was like, oh, Casey, you accused rapist.
Everybody's trash. Just remember that.
Everybody's trash.
Yeah. We'll sleep easier
that way. Oh, speaking of that, Ray, how's your sex life?
By the way, how's your sex life?
That's on hiatus. Actually, it's not.
You're seeing this married woman. She's gorgeous, but she's...
Yeah.
Fuck, are you fucking my wife? You fuck my wife? You fuck my wife?
Like, wait, no, I'll meet you up on the roof so you can, like, hit me over the edge.
I set up a green screen up there so we can be anywhere we want.
And I'll try to retrieve my drug money from Joe at the same time. So pointless.
Such a stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about the guilty pleasure of characters in Tommy Wiseau's The Room. In the room, in the room, in the motherfucking room. So, Andrew, pick a character for either Ray or me, whichever way you want to go.
Okay. Ray, I'm going to be super nice and easy on you because we dragged you to this. Screaming and kicking. So, I'm going to say Mark.
Mark.
And then you pick one for me, Ray. Anyone you want.
Well, we kind of joked about
me, Ray. Huh. That's musical.
It's Ray, me, dumbass.
We've already figured out what Danny other way does. Too. Do we just go ahead and give you Johnny? Johnny's such a fucking Mary Sue. I don't think there's anything.
That would be
there's no there, quite there.
Difficult, though.
Right. There's no there there. He has no substance or anything.
I will do any character you want.
Yeah, I can do
I'll do a Johnny.
Or if you'd like, you can also do Johnny and director Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah, like I said, he didn't really direct it. It says he directed it, but not really.
Okay.
Hi, Andrew.
I cower up in a ball.
So much to choose from.
I know. It's just.
I want you to do the woman who works in the flower shop.
Oh, that's easy. I've got it.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Shit.
It's something that isn't in the film, though.
Uh-huh.
It has to be something else.
Yeah.
Okay. Hit us, then, if you got to go.
Taxidermy.
Wow. Wow.
That pug is not alive.
She brings life
by day. The pug is alive.
Yeah, okay.
Barely.
You think it's been sedated because she's about to kill it and stuff it?
Exactly.
In our house, she has shit arranged, like flowers and stuff, the corpses, the taxidermy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's creepy as fuck.
Oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't realize it was you. That's me.
Yeah. She's got
you're my favorite customer. Shit. Oh, hi, doggy.
She has a knife right under the dog. Oh, hi, Johnny.
I didn't see you come in. How much? That'll be $14. Okay, keep the change. I love that scene so much.
It's perfect.
It's absolutely perfect.
I think about her often.
In the shower.
Yes.
With my dick. Yes. Johnny is a martyr. Johnny's guilty pleasure is having other people feel sorry for him.
Thank you. That's exactly how I feel watching that fucker. That's exactly, yeah.
I think
that's also Tommy Wiseau.
I think the reason we don't see him not get the promotion is because it's all, like, manufactured. Like, maybe he even got a promotion, but he likes telling Lisa that he didn't.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're already enacting my ideas. Maybe he doesn't even have any ideas.
It's the only way he can keep her.
Yeah.
He thinks anyway.
If she feels sorry for him.
It's why he doesn't confront her when he finds out that she's cheating on him. Because, like, his evidence is his leverage. He wants her to hear it herself.
So that she feels bad.
Yes.
It's like this.
Fucking Johnny, I hate him.
Guilt feedback loop.
Yeah,
That's
why he's always saying Mark is his best friend. On a subconscious level, he knows Mark is betraying him.
Yeah, that's why he's constantly assuring himself that everyone loves him.
Yes.
Because he knows that they don't.
What if this whole thing is like a fever dream he has right before he pulls that trigger?
I like that.
Does that mean he pulled the trigger for other reasons then? If he's dreaming all of it?
Ah.
Like maybe he hates his shit life and just manufactured all these reasons. The whole movie's him telling himself why he should pull the trigger.
How does the fever dream continue after he's dead? Because they rush up and yell at each other and mourn his loss and kiss his forehead.
What the fuck was
Mark
that?
Mark leans over and kisses Johnny's forehead.
I drove you to your death. Good night, sweet prince.
Which Greg objected to, but Tommy was insistent of. There's blood everywhere. There's so much fucking blood after he kills himself. It's unbelievable.
You leaned over and laughed about the blood.
You never really noticed because your mind goes right to his chiseled face. And then, but there's a massive pool of blood all around his head.
Like more than the six. What do we have in us? 6 liters or something?
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like 15 gallons.
They went all out. And you know, the semen in the dress. Like.
Looks like a Kurosawa film.
He definitely releases in that dress.
Oh my god, Joel.
You saw it. Saw him masturbating into the dress, and then he goes, and then he kills himself.
I think what it is, the fever dream ends at him killing himself. All the arguments and stuff they have afterwards, I think Denny is his lover.
Lecter.
In real life. I think that the other two are just having bad arguments with each other. That has nothing to do with him. Because Denny's the only one who's, like, really sad about it. Yeah. And Mark gives him the kiss, I believe, after. Denny shows up, right? Or am I getting it confused?
I don't remember. Because, yeah, they kind of half leave and then come back. Because Denny tells them to get out. And they don't really leave and then come back. I don't remember where the kiss is, though.
Mm-hmm. And then Lisa says something to him like, oh, at least now we can be together.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
Oh, what a bitch.
She does. Good point.
Ray.
Mark. I'm a little stumped on Mark. Everybody in that movie is so... Well, not everybody, but he's kind of inscrutable. You can't... I don't see much behind him.
Lisa would have been a hard one to do.
He doesn't fight, you know, much. He doesn't
feel... It's always hard to do the psychopaths.
Right, it's the normal people. Because I guess, on paper, Mark might be the most normal guy in the movie.
He is our avatar
in this film. Yeah, I think he is. So therefore, what's his guilty pleasure? And I've been thinking about this while we were talking about the others. It's hard to read this guy. Maybe his guilty pleasure is that... I don't know, because I kind of see that. I was going to say, maybe he doesn't consider Johnny his best friend. Maybe he likes sticking a knife in this guy.
Wow. He's like an Iago character.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
It was like Johnny, our Othello, if you'll pardon the comparison.
I mean, the similarity is endless.
Thinks that Mark is his closest confidant, his oldest friend. And Mark, for reasons that we don't fully understand, fucking hates his guts.
Hates him. And he relishes the fact that Johnny thinks that he's his best friend.
Yeah.
So who's the Jafar?
you're getting your things mixed up. But Lisa's the Jafar.
They have the same nose and everything. Oh my, yeah, I think that's what he is. Iago's perfect, though.
And the guy that Michelle's boyfriend is Apu. Abu? Abu, yeah.
It's Abu.
Because he has Abu face when he gets blown. Try not to think of Abu the next time you watch The Room. I just ruined Aladdin and everything else for you. I was trying to think of that along the same lines with Mark, that he just likes pushing his relationships to their limit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he tries to throw Peter off a roof just to see if he'll forgive him for throwing him off a roof.
Yes.
He fucks Johnny's future wife just to see if he can get away with it, just to see if Johnny can turn things around.
And his, if you think of it that way, it's really a seduction he's pulling on her. You know what I mean? He's dangling the carrot and she thinks she's seducing him, but it's really him. He's the puppet master behind the whole movie. Mark ain't shit, y'all.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I wish we had a scene then before, like, Lisa throws herself at Mark that we could analyze a little bit, where they're just hanging out, they're friends. They're talking about how great Johnny is and what a nice ass he has. And then he goes off because he's super busy after like 30 seconds of talking to her and comes back later and she throws himself at her.
Yeah. So, can we talk about I know we're running late. The scene where Mike, the Abu, when he talks about the scene that just happened. About him getting...
Yes! Oh my god, how do we fucking not talk about this?
Oh, you gotta remind me. What is it?
Okay. Well, so they go down to the alley to play football, and Mike is telling Johnny the story of having sex with Michelle and then Claudette and Lisa walking in on them.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
He just recounts that scene that we've already watched. Point by point, it contributes nothing new to the narrative except to get Johnny's reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is a scene you could have came into late. It just went right to Johnny's reaction.
Oh, my God. And his telling of the story, that feels improvised, actually. If anything in the movie feels improvised, it might be this.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I forgot my underwears. I had to go back for my underwears. I feel like now there's a bunch of stuff we forgot to get to, like them drinking scotch vodkas.
Oh, God, shit. I think you audibly groaned during that scene or something.
I can't imagine a worse thing to put in my face. I don't drink.
Me either.
I certainly don't drink scotch or vodka, but putting them together.
We should. We'll save it for The Room Part 2, where we talk about The Room again.
And the you guys just want to do this every year?
Yeah, let's just.
And have a new take on it each time. Yeah.
I imagine every time I see it, I feel like I'm watching a different movie, which begs the question, does The Room change or do I? All right, let's do plugs very quickly. Andrew, what do you want to plug?
Nothing.
Awesome. I love it when that happens. Ray, what do you want to plug?
You know what? I thought about this long and hard recently. Comedian Paul Mooney, if you're familiar with any of his stuff, he was one of Richard Pryor's co-writers, was the head writer for In Living Color Season 1. And he's the first comedian I had ever seen. I I knew about him in the 80s during some TV specials, but I listened to his CDs that were out of print. One is called Race. One is called Masterpiece, 1993 and 1995. I discovered them in 2005, and I had never seen a comedian whose entire act, you know, we know Race comics, Lisa Lampanelli, Mencia, Don Rickles, but I had never heard a Race comic who only just goes in on white people. It changed my life.
Is any of his stuff on Netflix?
Maybe, but you... I want you guys to hear the CDs themselves.
Okay.
It's actually a litmus test for my white friends. It's kind of crazy because some can't take it because it's brutal. It's an older black guy's view on race. So, you know, this is a guy who lived through Jim Crow and all that shit.
I'm totally down
for it. It's harsh
as fuck. If I could borrow it.
I showed it to my friend. I mean, not showed it. I gave him to my friend Steve around 2011 or so. He says it changed his whole perspective on race. And when I listened to it, I was in a room working at a pharmaceutical company that I was about to name. And I was the only black guy in the room, and this is office clerical work. So I got headphones in, and I'm laughing my ass off so hard that I literally had to get up and leave the room, go to the bathroom, and just laugh in tears because I had never heard somebody that frank about it. And then my coworkers, of course, they're all white, and they're asking me, what are you laughing at? Oh, just this morning show I'm listening to because I feel guilty. They're hysterical to me anyway. I re-listened to them about 2 weeks ago. That's why I wanted to plug it. So
awesome.
Yes, I have the MP3s. I'll inbox you or something.
Okay, now what I really want to plug.
Andrew, what do you want to plug?
Let's see here. Eventually, one of these days, I'm going to get dealing with Philip back up and running. But go look up the Materia Collective. It's a group of composers who do remixes of video game music.
I love those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Materia, so, like Final Fantasy.
Yeah, Materia, like Final Fantasy. That's what they started off as. Hmm. They just had their 3-year anniversary. You can listen to me on some of them. I'm
sweet.
Playing my tuba on two pieces.
Nice.
And then, yeah. Oh, and 1988's Bloodsport.
Natural.
I should probably rewatch it and discover your love for it.
My Twitter is at @play_architect. Ray's is at @mosky1213. Andrew's is at @vgcomposer.
I don't think I follow you, Andrew. I'll be rectifying it right now.
He never tweets. Don't worry about it.
Okay, well, there goes that.
Dealing with Philip is at Deal with Philip. We are at Quote Guilty. You can find us on Facebook. You can email us. All of that is in the show notes.
Before you go, are you going to use the song that they played in the theater on the way out?
Yes. That's definitely the outro music.
Just making sure.
Absolutely. You can... contribute to our Patreon page, patreon.com/wordsalad, which supports the Word Salad podcast, and I'd like to plug them. There's Dealing with Philip sometimes. There's Cadavercast. There's TuneIn Pod. There's the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. There's Word Salad Radio, which isn't really supported by the Patreon because it doesn't cost me anything to do, and I just do it when I feel like it. But you can check all those out by going to our Patreon page. There's links to the various shows and all that. So, and exclusive content. Exclusive content that we did, and we'll be doing a lot more of as we get into spring and summer, because I got a bunch of ideas and no time to do any of them, so that's the plan for this summer, is record the hell out of it. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Always a pleasure.
You're tearing me apart,
Joe. You are tearing me apart!
I was wondering when we get to that, but now it works. It's the best line in the
movie. You know, I did not hit her. I did not. I don't know
the rest of the line. It's bullshit. I mean, I know it's bullshit. You did not hit her. You did not. You did not.
Oh. Hi, Ray.
Oh, hi, Ray.
Who the fuck would want to be with somebody that accuses them of spousal abuse? Anyways.
Yeah. Johnny's the real victim here.
Yeah.
That's what we can take away.
That's what it is. Lisa didn't even lie. Johnny just wanted... He likes the lie because he's such a victim.
All right. This is Quote Unquote Guilty. You are not guilty. Good night, everybody. You were tearing me apart, Lisa. This podcast is a Word Salad production. Wonky Oranges, Righteous Dragons.
Okay, done. Now the podcast is ending. Okay. I don't know what to do. I'll treat you like a princess, and you stab me in the back. Who are you talking to? I wanna give a second chance after I've seen my future wife. You know what they say, love is blind. I have an announcement to make. Fit up with this world. Get out, get out, get out.